The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin period, Portugal and Spain, 1382, part 1. Now, last time we'd actually talked about this treaty issue, this peace talks that the French were having with the English. Well, here's what happened. In spite of the great expectations which had built up around it, the peace conference came to nothing. At the last moment, the English downgraded the negotiations by announcing that John of Gaunt would not, after all, be coming. Instead, it was the familiar and competent but less august figure of John Gilbert, Bishop of Hereford. He appeared at Calais, and he, according to the malicious Thomas Walsingham, was a man who liked blather better than truth. The Duke of Burgundy, accordingly, remained at court, sent less impressive personages to represent France in his place. Gilbert's instructions did not survive, but it is plain that he had very little authority. The discussions appear to have broken down over the issue of Castile. John of Trastamara had made it clear to the latest French ambassador to visit the court that he would not agree to any truce unless it extended to Castile, but that was unacceptable to John of Gaunt. It would have halted the operations of the Earl of Cambridge in Portugal at the very moment when the long-delayed invasion of Castile was expected to start, and would have obstructed preparations for the second army which Gaunt was bent on sending out in the following spring. Faced with this impasse, Richard II's council was forced to decide whether it would back Gaunt's plan or not. At about the beginning of July 1382, they met at Westminster to try and give some clear direction to the English diplomats and military planning. John Gilbert returned from Picardy, leaving his fellow ambassadors to carry on the argument with the French. Fogacheff was still at the Westminster, pressing for intervention in Castile at the earliest possible moment. There was no surviving records of the outcome, but there's good reasons to believe that John of Gaunt's allies prevailed. The council appears to have decided that their first priority would be to send Gaunt with an army to Gascony in the spring of 1383, provided that Parliament could be persuaded to vote funds for it. Gaunt planned to cross the Pyrenees passes in the Castile while his brother and King Fernando launched a simultaneous invasion from Portugal. The council proposed to keep open the alternative strategy in the north, partly, no doubt, because the commons' hostility to Gaunt's Castilian ambition was well known, and partly because the more optimistic among them thought it might be possible to run both projects at once. After the meeting had closed, a herald was sent to the siege lines at Oudenarde to propose that Philip van Artevelde should come to England in person to concert plans. Fogacheff sailed for Portugal to report to Fernando. These decisions went some way to resolving the division between Richard II's advisors, between the partisans of a northern and a southern strategy, by conceding something to each, but they condemned the conference in Picardy to failure. John Gilbert returned to the March of Picardy with nothing to offer. The ceasefire was extended until October 1382, effectively writing off the campaign season for that year, but nothing more could be agreed to. Unknown to the English council, the future of the Anglo-Portuguese alliance, on which the southern strategy depended, had already become extremely uncertain. In Portugal, the war with Castile was proving to be destructive and unpopular. With the coming of spring, some 80 Castilian sailing ships and oared barges had appeared in the Tagus and began to blockade Lisbon. Every day, Castilian men-at-arms and Basque mountain troops landed from the ships to plunder and burn. They sacked the suburbs of Lisbon. They destroyed the fine mansions of the king and nobility, which stood along the banks of the river from Lisbon to Santarém. They launched large-scale mounted raids across to Ribatejo, the opposite city. Much of this was cattle country, which was rapidly denuded of its herds. There was no Portuguese fleet to resist them. It was more than a month before there was any organized defense, even on land. Away in the east, the English army passed 6 months, from January to June, by the Castilian frontier. Fernando had given strict instructions that the English were not to raid in the Castile, for fear of provoking a counterattack for which his army was not prepared. His orders were not, shall we say, consistently obeyed. Early in the year, Canon Robesart led some 800 men across the Guadagnina into the foothills of the Sierra Morena. Another raiding force in the spring briefly penetrated in the Castile north of Bajau, supported by Portuguese frontier troops. But for most of the time, the English sat unpaid and bored in their winter quarters awaiting orders and staring at the great featureless plain of Portugal. Since they couldn't support themselves at the expense of their enemies, they had little choice but to live off their hosts. Their encampments were situated in the richest agricultural region of Portugal. The English ranged through it, breaking in the houses, stealing cattle, raping women. They tortured those who hid their goods and killed those who resisted. An English chronicler, who presumably got his information from men serving with the army, reported that his countrymen treated the Portuguese like worthless serfs. The Portuguese king repeatedly complained to the Earl of Cambridge, but although the Earl issued orders that the offenses were to stop, he was not a man to make his wishes respected. After the outrages which had occurred around Lisbon the previous autumn, relations between the English and the Portuguese sank to new lows. Englishmen traveling on their own were attacked and murdered. They were given poisoned bread to eat. Town gates were closed in their faces. Some of these were stormed by undisciplined mobs of English soldiers as if they were enemy strongholds. So you can see, this is not going very well. So we'll see what happens in the spring of 1382. Now the sources for this, the Hundred Years' War, the Chronicles by Froissart, the Hundred Years' War by Perrois, the Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and the Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.